I suggest we start. Everybody seems to be here. We start our discussions today with property, land, and equipment. Proceeds before internal dues. I give the floor to Vincent.
Thank you. Hello, good morning to everybody. We will start this morning with Agenda Paper 4, which seeks your advice on how best to proceed with the proposed amendment to IS-16 regarding proceeds before intended use. To support the discussion, we have supplemented this Agenda Paper with two other papers. Agenda Paper 4A includes our analysis of the feedback received and the possible approaches to move forward with the project. The Interpretation Committee discussed this paper last month. Agenda Paper 4B provides a summary of feedback received, including in Appendix B to this paper, a summary of the preliminary views that you shared with us last July. This was presented to the Board in December 2017. Before presenting the possible approaches set out in the paper, I will provide you with a view of the key aspects of the feedback analysis included in paragraph 14 to 84 of Agenda Paper 4A. Overall, many respondents either disagreed with or expressed concern about the proposed amendments. One of the main issues raised relates to the recognition in profit or loss of the proceeds. Some respondents view the proposed amendment as an improvement to financial reporting, while some others question whether they would result in useful information. In our view, the proposed amendments would provide useful information. However, we acknowledge that some presentation or disclosure requirements could be considered to possibly further improve the usefulness of this information. Another issue mentioned relates to cost allocation. Many respondents said the requirement to separately identify costs that relates to item produced before an item of PP&E is available for use would present practical challenges and thus might result in diversity in the reporting of costs. We are not fully convinced that the proposed amendments would create any significant new practical challenges from a cost accounting perspective. However, we acknowledge that it might be helpful to possibly consider including requirements on cost allocation. A number of respondents also asked the board to clarify when an item of PP&E is available for use because, as said, there is significant diversity in how entities determine this. In our view, paragraph 20 of the basis for conclusion to the ED includes helpful indicators in relation to this point, but there was almost no feedback on those indicators. Clarifying when an asset is available for use is a possible option that the board might consider on this project. The feedback included other areas of comments, such as whether the sales proceeds arise from an entity's ordinary activities, the exclusion of depreciation from the cost of item produced, and the interaction with other standards, in particular IS 23 and IFRS 6. I will now move on to paragraph 85 to 105 of Agenda Paper 4A, which set out possible approaches to move forward with the project. In our view, there are three possible approaches. The first approach is to finalize the proposed amendments, largely without modification. The second approach is to proceed with the ED, with some modification, to address stakeholders' main concerns. Those modifications could include cost allocation requirements, disclosure requirements, or the inclusion of additional explanation regarding testing activities. Applying the third and last approach, the board would not proceed with the proposed amendments, but would instead require specific disclosure of the amount of proceeds credited against the cost of items of PP&E. The board would then explore whether it might undertake standard setting to clarify the notion of available for use, or whether this point should be considered as part of the extractive activities research project. For your interpretation, the Interpretation Committee For your information, the Interpretation Committee discussed those three approaches last month. Many Interpretation Committee members supported approach two, and in particular, the inclusion of high-level principle or requirements on cost allocation and specific disclosure requirements. Two committee members supported approach three, while one committee member viewed the second and the third approaches as complementary. I will now ask for your advice on the best course of action to follow on this project.
So, yes, we have already sent our common letter. We basically agree with the general principle to consider sales rather than a deduction of the cost of the asset in order to avoid funny situation with the negative fixed assets. And of course, there might be necessary to, as said, in approach two, which we agree on, to better clarify when a fixed asset is ready for use or for the intended use and for cost allocation. Probably some general principles on cost allocation and leaving some room of judgment to the preparers, as judgment is an integral part of financial statements. So I don't think that you should go into too much details, but just general principle on cost allocation, like we have in IS2 for inventories. You know, it seems not to create any big problems on this respect. Approach two.
Andrea?
Thank you. When you said that there are three approaches, I would suggest that there are at least two more. So approach four would be do nothing. And approach five would be a revised approach two, proceed with the ED but with some major modifications. And the reason I'm saying that is up until that issue came before the IFRS Interpretations Committee, I wasn't of the opinion that there is really a big issue. When we then discussed your proposals a year ago, I think we heard from those jurisdictions that have extractive industries that this is a major concern for them. And I think, to me, that signals that proceeding with the ED is just a null set. It doesn't work, because it would certainly help all other industries except for extractive industries, which is why I think you probably should be going back to the drawing board and do some further research as to what is it specifically that you do want to tackle. I note that the ED's proposals have gone a good step further than the original question that was asked of the Interpretations Committee. And if you probably go back to the initial questions that was raised, that might lead you to a more robust answer. In terms of dealing with the issue for the extractive industry sector, you do have some discussion in the paper where you say as soon as the product that you take out of the earth is ready for intended use, that is, could be sold for more than just threat value, then this is a strong indication that probably you have finalized your development phase. So that might be a good principle that might equally work for other sectors than just extractive industries. So look into what is really testing in terms of mining and extractive industries. And a good way of proceeding there is if you really can sell something for more than scrap value, it seems to suggest that you've completed your testing, and then you just book revenue. And you don't deduct from cost of conversion.
Can I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
Just to clarify? So based on that, like, let's assume there's five possible approaches. Like, which would be your preferred approach?
Probably something between four and five.
Okay. And
or modify two.
Because the one consistent comment that we got, and obviously based on the comment letters, there was a lot of comments and varying opinions, but the one consistent comment that we got and from the additional outreach was disclosure, that disclosure would be helpful, disclosure of the extent of, when did you determine the available for use date, what are the the amount of sales proceeds that are being offset against the P&L. And I think in approach two, like Benson, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in that one we said it would be somewhat of occasions and it could be disclosure and or additional guidance on cost allocation. In terms of the de minimis, I guess the comment on extractives, you know, once something's come out of the ground and you can sell stuff, I mean, that's something we looked at as well, and obviously still considering, but the issue then is determining what's the de minimis amount, and we did speak to the US so on that, because that's obviously similar to some of the guidance in US GAAP.
So I would be a bit concerned if we just park that again in disclosure, because disclosure to me is only ever the second best solution. I mean, if this is an accounting problem, so it should be dealt with in accounting and not just through disclosures.
So can I just ask, Andreas, maybe one of your first comments was you felt that what we proposed does not help, you know, it seems to be this is a major concern where there's extractives, and you said this does not help extractives. Can you maybe explain that one?
Well, I recall that, I think it was Kim Bromfield a year ago who said the current situation is such that some extractive industry companies are taking advantage of a loophole in the standard, in that they just say, well, it's all testing, while they are happily selling the stuff already. And she just felt that the suggested amendments would actually say, yes, you're right. Yeah, you don't book that as revenue. And I thought that for all other industries, what most people are doing, at least what I see, is they don't book it as revenue. They just have it as a reduction of the cost. That would work pretty well. So, which is why I think that when you develop the proposals, you seem to be gotten hung up with what's testing. But that wasn't the original question. It came to the committee, right? So,
maybe I'll just explain, because actually I think that the original question was actually more focused around testing, and I suppose what happened is that, because the original question was kind of about, look, IS16 seems to say I can, you know, I clearly capitalise costs of testing as part of the cost, and when I do that, I can also reduce credit proceeds from testing. And so the original question was, you know, well, first of all, it was just in the wording, are the proceeds that I can credit only those from testing? And also, if that is yes as well, is there a limit in a sense? Can I only credit against the cost, you know, up to the amount of the asset? So actually the question originally was completely about testing. The committee went through, first of all, a process to try and answer that very question in the literature. After much work, we decided, to answer that question, we can't do it in the literature, we need to undertake standard setting. And then also, as the basis explains, they initially thought about just, doing standard setting to address that piece. But what they worked out was, compared to what we proposed, just looking at testing was going to both be, we thought, more costly, because it would mean you have to identify costs of testing, you have to identify proceeds from testing separate from everything else. And even additionally, if we wanted to limit the credit, we were going to even have to then distinguish exactly similar proceeds of testing, some of which would get capitalised, some of which would get put to P&L. So that was actually going to be, to just answer the question, you might say, was going to be more complicated and less useful, which is why, you know, the committee then recommended to the board, and the board went this route of looking at something that looks slightly wider, but we actually thought it would be less costly. And we actually thought it would result in better information, because everything that is proceeds, that looks like revenue or income, would be reported as such. And I suppose to your point about where we also thought it was a way potentially of targeting where the problem seemed to be, which is, you know, possibly in a lot of extractives, maybe a bit in petrochemicals. So by doing it this way, say, as opposed to looking at the available for use line, it would seem to potentially target the change where there was the problem. In a sense, it's not to say that looking at the available for use line would be great, but if we did that, that potentially results in at least for everybody, re-looking at that line, etc., whereas I think the identified, at least the problem that had been identified to us was more where there are...
So you're saying it does solve the extractive industries problem as well?
I think that's what we... You know, there are clearly some concerns. So I think it was solving what was identified to us, which was great diversity and how they were treating these proceeds. I think what's come out of the feedback is obviously, and you read a lot from the extractive sector as well, to say it raises some questions for them. How do I do the cost allocation? And so that's why we're saying maybe there's things we can do to address.
Also, I think what Katrina is addressing, and that's why I had my card up to say to Andreas, because in one sense it does sound appealing to say, why don't we just go back and answer the question that we were asked in the first place, because we seem to have answered a slightly different question. And I was going to ask Katrina to remind us why that wasn't what we did, and I think you just answered that question. It sounds easier than it is, I think, which is why that wasn't one of the alternatives the staff had put forward.
Yeah, although it was fully explained on the basis, because we were keen that people could tell us then if they disagreed.
Linda.
Thanks. So I just wanted to give a little perspective on the importance of this issue in Canada, and then I'll comment. So clearly, we're one of the jurisdictions where extractive industries is significant. If you take mining and oil and gas in combination, that's about 20% of our total market cap. The other significance to that is if you look at mining and oil and gas, that's where we get the most prevalence of a mixture of IFRS and US GAAP. And in mining alone, we have more companies in mining pretty much than any other sector. So they tend to be somewhat smaller in size, but when you put them together, they rank up, and then we get the proliferation of the many number of companies. And so it's important. And the other thing, the perspective I don't want to lose sight of, is that we do quarterly reporting. So when you talk about immaterial impacts and stuff like that, you really need to think beyond the notion of annual reporting and think about quarterly reporting from a decision useful perspective. And that's important to us. So we would not be supportive of the first approach one. We would be supportive, and I'm not going to proliferate on number four and five. I'm just going to say we would be supportive of some combination of two or three. If you feel that time is of the essence, you're concerned about your ability to move forward guidance on the cost side in a quick manner, we think that approach three should be done quickly. And perhaps you might actually learn something from the disclosures, not sure. But certainly you'd be getting some transparency out there. And that would help the notion of what the users are looking at. Like, we're supportive of the notion of recognizing the revenue, but we think that if you're going to recognize the revenue, you also need to be systematic about recognizing the cost. Mm. Because if the users are looking at that margin impact and trying to use that information from a forecasting perspective, we think it's really important that there's some systematic approach to cost. But however, if you want to go with approach two, then we would certainly recommend some further guidance on the cost side. And in your paragraph 95, A2, you talk about, you know, focusing people on direct costs. And we've actually done some of that in our local project on agriculture, where we've focused them on simplistically, if this is the only tracking you do on cost, then you can use these types of costs, not prohibiting a broader allocation, but basically focusing on that. And then we think that would be actually the best way forward would be approach two, but we could see a combination of the two if you choose to act on a more timely basis. This is important to us. We've discussed it in our IFRS discussion group now four times since 2014, which means it's an issue that keeps coming up over and over again. So we would fully support moving forward, but not with the ED as proposed.
Lucio.
Thank you. We understand that this issue relates to cases in a limited number of industries where the proceeds from selling items exceed the cost of testing. So we think the existing requirements in IAS 16 are well understood and applied consistently by many other industries. But while we understand the guidance may be needed for the limited number of industries, we are not convinced that there is a need to change existing practice for the many other industries. Nevertheless, we think clarifying the meaning of testing and expanding the disclosure requirements may result in an improvement to existing requirements and thus support these proposals.
Cédric?
Thank you, Hans. We're very similar to you. We think that there is the situation in France is such that they don't feel very concerned by the issue, and it would have side effects that would be very burdensome for the usual industry, where such proceeds are very marginal compared to the cost. So we acknowledge that it's a practical expedient to record the proceeds against the cost, but it's a practical expedient which is due to the difficulty to calculate the cost of sales if it would be recognized as a sale, and it's a very convenient practical expedient today, so that our constituents were not keen to support a change in the standard, but as has been mentioned, it would be probably useful to clarify when an item is capable of operating in the manner intended by management. So, clarifying the threshold where the proceeds may exceed the cost is probably an indirect way to find a solution instead of changing the accounting principle in that way.
Sorry. Can I just ask, Cedric, so I understood what you're saying is in France they thought the issue, if I understood, so people thought, yes, the issue is more in the extractive sector, but you said some felt there might be some side effects for other sectors. I was just wondering, is because one thing for me, I thought as our proposed amendments tried to, I thought it wouldn't really have any effect for any industry sector or companies that didn't have any material amounts of proceeds that were being, you know, credited against the cost of an asset. So I was just wondering just what were the thoughts about the side effects, and I want to contrast that with, as I say, that if we were instead to do some more clarification or whatever you thought about around, say, available for use, then that certainly directly affects everybody that's got PP&E. Now, it might not affect as in any change, but at least it would make every entity, you know, re-look at available for use. So I was just wondering if you could explain maybe what were the,
well, it's
the sort
probably,
of side effects. Or
the side effect is that in all other industries, such proceeds are marginal. So having put in place all the process of investigating what kind of cost is it, what are the because such proceeds in the testing phase, costs are not allocated on a very defined way, because per definition we are in a testing phase, so it's difficult to assess a standard cost. So you may have exceed cost, and it's difficult to calculate the cost of sales. You wouldn't have no amortization, of course. So you have difficulties in identifying all the costs which would be related to the revenues that you would record. I agree with you that at the end of the day, the impact would be probably marginal, because it's still a marginal proceed. But the process to put in place would be very burdensome. That's a problem. That's what
I think you're saying. Everybody that has any amount of proceeds, even if it's not very big, would have to go through a process.
Exactly.
I had a similar.
Is that what we think?
It's interesting, I suppose, because at least...
That's what it would say, right?
Yeah.
Then you'd have to figure out, is it immaterial, and is it immaterial to a quarter?
Yeah.
Is it always immaterial?
Yeah, I mean, you'd only have that, that's what I'm saying. I mean, in theory, this would only, the amendment would only affect you, assuming, you know, the amounts are material. But I know what you're saying, Jim, is potentially to work out whether they're material or not. You might have to do some work to justify that. At least from what we heard through all the comment letters, we didn't hear that it would have material effects outside, you know, definitely extractives, perhaps petrochemicals, perhaps one or two pharmaceutical companies. But it would be interesting to hear if you think otherwise from what you've heard in your jurisdictions.
That was just a question. I had Cedric's similar question. Is there any industries in particular that, you know, have strong concerns about this in your jurisdiction? Or is it just generally else, you know, even outside of extractives, people are generally concerned about the impact it would have and it could be material to them?
No, honestly, I can't say there is a specific industry. It's what we heard in any manufacturing industry, when you put a new factory in your new process in place, you may have some process relating to the implementation, and that could happen, but it's never something very significant. It's never, the proceeds are never higher than the costs of
I hope pharmaceuticals are not being sold in the testing phase.
Yeah, I know.
Andrew?
It might be material to utilities, those who produce electricity before having finished all the equipment.
Yep.
Utilities.
It's amazing the problems we can have in accounting. It's fun. Can this even be a problem?
Okay. Well, responding, dropping our response to the ED revealed that there were very mixed views among European constituents. You've heard a sample of those this morning from other European commentators. Overall, we didn't support the direction of the ED where we landed. So moving forward, I think approach three would kind of come closest to what we were suggesting in our comment letter. And I can see that disclosing the amount of proceeds deducted, which would imply there is some form of accounting policy choice at work here, but that providing that disclosure would be useful information. It might also just help focus the minds of management on whether the asset really is ready for its intended use as that number grows. One suggestion we made is to carry out some form of effects analysis. I don't think we mean a 100-page type document that would accompany a major new standard here, but I've been exposed to this issue right from the beginning, having been on the Interpretations Committee when the original request came in. And at that time, and right through to today, I hear contradictory-sounding comments on whether or not the issue is actually material. And I think it depends on whether we are, to some extent, really are just dealing with proceeds from testing, with a sort of normal understanding of what testing is, or we're bringing in the extractive industries where, well, maybe you can describe when you're digging your hole in the ground and developing the mine, but also extracting saleable material. I wouldn't call that testing personally. Others might choose to call it testing. Doesn't sound like testing to me. So the Global Preparers Forums also, some have said it's not material, others said it is material. So some form of analysis of what we're actually dealing with here, both in terms of which industries are there material amounts of proceeds currently being deducted, what is the current accounting treatment, I think would be very helpful to do. On extractive industries, it does seem quite anomalous that if it's a surface mine, you apply for 20 and you do the, you know, your proceeds are revenue, and there's cost allocation guidance in IFRIC 20, which I'm not aware that that's been particularly problematic to apply, but I haven't looked at it closely. If you're doing subsurface mining, then there seems to be mixed practice. But if the effects analysis does reveal that, I'll say, a high proportion of the issue, potential inconsistency or the uncertainty, is in the extractive industries, then perhaps a short-term approach of disclosure and then looking at this in the context of the extractive industries research project might be a pragmatic way forward. We did also in our comment letter suggest that if you wanted to do something on the recognition and measurement shorter term, then do focus on the original issue that went to the IFRIC, which I think was just the excess of proceeds above the cost of testing, and whether that credit was to P&L or to the asset. But I'm actually quite persuaded that It wouldn't be particularly helpful to focus on that piece of the issue, because it only seems to be the sort of tip of the iceberg in terms of the overall accounting for proceeds during the development phase of an asset.
So maybe the staff could comment on the question of how material this is and the evidence we've got about the diversity and the extent of the problem, because I think it is a fair question. My gut tells me, though, obviously we can't rely on my gut, but my gut tells me that the strength of feeling on this issue means it must be material.
And I think it is, sorry, I'll start, and Vincent, you definitely have more of the detail, but I think from the various, I mean, speaking to people in Canada in particular, I think has been particularly, you know, insightful. So it has, in the exposure draft and all the work that the committee did, and Andrew, you were part of, had identified extractives in particular and petrochemicals. Mm-hmm. And at least it seems to be, so it's interesting today, by the way, to get more information on whether there's other industries affected. Via the comment letters and conversations we've had, including, you know, with, as I say, in Canada in particular, and directly and speaking to a number of the mining companies, etc. So we are getting, it certainly, and seems to be, by the way, when we say extractives, it seems to be mining more than oil and gas. And I think that's linked to the fact that the period of time that it takes to construct or develop some of the mining assets is a much longer period. It gets into the years 3, 5, you know, maybe beyond 5 years to get some of those assets to the point where management decides it's available for use, versus oil and gas assets that can still take some time, but not as long a time. So it seems to be less of a problem for oil and gas companies. Certainly some of the oil and gas companies we spoke to implied, yes, there are material numbers in there, but it's not as big as it is for the mining companies. So certainly the intelligence we've got is there are big numbers in there, particularly for mining, a bit less for oil and gas. We haven't heard a great deal in the comment letter process from petrochemicals, have we? Even though no. I think
from
the
utility companies, we understand
utility
that
companies as well.
Yes, because when you want to operate an asset, sometimes you need to sell the output, and the amount of proceeds might be material in that case. But just to add some other information with what Petrina has said, when you assess the materiality, what we also heard from the mining industry that maybe the amount at stake are not material per se, but when you consider them in the computation of some KPIs, of some key performance indicators, or when you use them in gap or non-gap measures, then it might be material. And it might also result in additional variability in the statement of profit or loss, etc. And so this is also a matter of concern for those industries. So maybe when you look at the amount, they are not the biggest material amount, but when you use those amounts to compute key performance indicators, then you might have some significant impact.
This I don't understand. So overall, it's not material, but then in a KPI, it can become material?
This is what we're...
Yeah.
And at segment level, we also heard that at segment level, it might be be material.
And it would be material to metrics that matter to users of financial statements.
Yes.
Yes.
So I think that means it is material.
Exactly. I think probably the first statement of it's not material, it means looking at some metric, it sort of doesn't stand out, but overall it doesn't.
And it would depend on the type of mining company, because Linda mentioned you've got the junior mining companies, they might just have one mining project underway, whereas for a bigger company, you know, they've maybe got six underway, so it doesn't impact the KPIs as much. So it really depends on the size of the organisation. And Europe's been interesting, I thought, because... you know, some of the European constituents we've done outreach with have said they're fine with everything and it isn't an issue for them. And then we've heard other, obviously, European constituents, including the representatives today, who've said the opposite of that. So it's been a bit of a big mixed bag. But the biggest concerns have been extractives, including oil sands.
And I think the thing combined with that is there does seem to be quite a difference, of course, which has been highlighted today, and when people decide to stop capitalising and start depreciating. So that when management thinks it's capable of being used in the land, there's quite a bit of variability.
Noble.
Yes, thank you. I'll be representing the AOSSG for this session. And I'd like to introduce the views from AOSSG members. One jurisdiction supported approach one, which is to proceed with the amendments proposed in the ED. Two other jurisdictions supported approach three. However, one of these jurisdictions considered that it would be more useful for the ISP to address this issue as part of the extractive industries research project, because the issue would be material only for entities in the mining sector. The other jurisdiction expressed its concern that although the ISP assumes that entities would already have a robust cost allocation system, the allocation of indirect costs would be difficult to do in practice. Yet another jurisdiction supported adding the disclosure requirements but did not support amending the requirements about the proceeds from selling items produced before intended use, because this jurisdiction believed that the requirements in I-16 are not broken for most industries.
Jim?
So maybe we're just blissfully unaware in the U.S. I don't think we hear this issue as much, but we also have specific guidance for extractive industries. I wonder if that might, just thinking from that perspective, lead you a little bit to approach three, is that is figure out, is this a broad issue for all industries? I think we're hearing a lot of it's really important to extractive. So do you need a solution for other industries? And then in extractive, it sounds like there's maybe more than one question. Is it just the crediting of the proceeds, or is it that there's broad diversity and when something is available for its intended use? And those are perhaps two different problems. Mm. You could say credit the proceeds, but if there's broad diversity and when something's available, you're still not going to get consistency. So disclosure in the interim might help you identify which industries, is it only one, and which issue to address.
Chris?
Oh, thanks, Florence. So extractives are actually quite a big issue in Australia, but it's interesting. We don't seem to have had the same level of concern, so I'm a little bit nervous about what that means, whether or not they're just off doing their own thing, but certainly hasn't been a big bone of contention. But the feedback we've had is that this does seem to be an issue that's explicit for the extractive industry, and therefore we think it's probably better that it's dealt with as part of the extractive activities project rather than, I think, for the reasons that Cedric and Yukio were talking about, actually creating more angst for others. If you're going to continue down a path of doing something for all sectors, then what we'd actually suggest that you do is think about historical costs more broadly and what does that actually mean. As one of the things in the ED and the proposals is you focused on the income piece, but you didn't actually go back to the conceptual framework and say, do we have anything here about what is actually the cost of this particular asset? So I think if you are going to proceed with anything, you actually do need to look at both sides of that equation and make sure you've landed on the right outcomes. So broadly speaking, our preferred approach would be approach three, which would, I think, have some of the benefits that others have mentioned, that you'd at least, through disclosures, start to get a better understanding of what the real issue is and how broad it is, and hopefully hone in on what the real issue is. Because I think, again, it is about that timing of when you stop saying it's an asset that's not available for use is more the real problem, not so much the actual proceeds themselves, particularly.
Do you agree that you think that, because obviously, and just around available for use, the committee and the board did consider that quite a lot, and the whole reason we explained it all on the basis, and we spelled out in BC20 some thoughts around that was we were hoping if people thought that was the way to go, they'd give us comments on that, and then they'd say, oh no, that's the way to go, or that's the way to go, but we don't think you've addressed it. Do you think some of what was in the basis is a feasible direction and
I think it was a useful start. Again, I think if you come back to what's the real, I think Jim's point was this, what's the real issue? Mm-hmm. If you ask the question in that, the question is when do you stop capitalising, that's going to get people's attention more than when do I actually capitalise proceeds of sale. Mm-hmm. So I suspect if you can hone in on what the right question is, what the right issue is, then you'll actually get some different responses or a broader group of things.
Just a couple of additional questions. One's an observation that when we did outreach, further outreach with the extractives and mining companies, we did speak to the one of the mining companies in Australia who were positive in their letter, supportive, although subject to some caveats, admittedly, but they were supportive of putting sales into the P&L. But your comment about it, you know, not perhaps being a significant issue thus far in Australia, notwithstanding the magnitude of the extractives industry, is that in part, do you think, influenced at all by practice prior to IFRS?
It will be. It's just that the experience that I have is that your junior miners are trying to capitalise everything they possibly can.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't actually want to put proceeds off against this expenditure because they're trying to make out that they've actually got an asset that people will want to invest in.
Yeah.
And the big entities don't care because this is just not going to be material to them. They don't capitalise anything. Mm. So I suspect that's why we don't have any... There's not a big outcry in Australia because, if anything, they probably say, well, this answer gives us what we want. But, as I said, I just don't think it's really the right question. I think the bigger issue is when you stop saying I'm still in IFRS 6 and I can do whatever I kind of feel like and I actually then get thrown into what's a proper development phase.
Thank you.
Alexandra?
I pretty much found similar situation in Brazil, so a lot of mining companies, but no big concern about the topic. But getting a little bit deeper in the conversation, actually what I found is it's important to split the discussion between the small junior, but called junior mining company and regular, mature, more mature companies. And there is a comment here on the appendix C, it's C3. That's pretty much reflects what I heard, which is for more mature companies, if the proceeds of selling those products are material, probably your definition of ready for use is wrong.
Because
those companies are investing all the time. They don't invest in one mine here and they stop and then invest in another. They're investing all the time. So if those proceeds are actually being material for those more mature companies, the problem is a different problem.
Mm.
So and I believe the current treatment, which is to capitalize those costs, well. Because of they are immaterial, you say, well, let's not bother to get the P&L of that. Let's capitalize it because of its immateriality. So people get a little bit more concerned about why should those elements be material for a more mature company.
Mm-hmm.
For junior companies, I believe it's a different story. But for junior companies and other sectors, we have different problems. So that's what. People actually start to be concerned when getting to the discussion, not before. So the sea was calm. We're going to discuss this. Well, why is that material? Should it be material? How are you defining this line method?
Lynn?
We sent our ED, and basically we do not agree with the proposal in the ED and share our concerns with many of the other jurisdictions. And we think, for example, cost allocation. And so if it is an issue specifically concerning the extractive industry, we think the best way forward is to take approach 3.
Okay.
Trina, you want to make a summary of what you heard of?
Oh.
Not necessarily. If you get a clear picture.
Diverse views.
Yeah.
Consistent with the issues.
Yeah.
Do what you want.
We've taken very detailed notes, which at least for me have covered 3 pages, so it's just very good. I mean, sorry, I can try to do a summary, but I might not do a good job. But I think genuinely diverse views. I don't think anybody's supporting approach 1. Mm-hmm. I think some suggesting, I'll maybe go to a post, some certainly suggesting a disclosure as a first step that might then provide more information that either would suggest this really is only for the extractives, so it's something to do in the extractives industry, or alternatively, you know, available for use is really the underlying problem, and therefore, you know, that's where time should be spent. And I think also some support for approach to, and I heard some support to say, if approach to, then yes, cost allocation, but I think keeping anything we say around cost allocation at a high level, not going into excruciating detail. Linda, I know I heard a comment from you that we could maybe think about how you've done about it to focus in on direct costs, but not excluding anything wider. And so that was my... Some mentioned the requirements already in IS2 and IFRIC 20. And I think some input on.
We also heard a view saying that, well, just address the initial question that the interpretation committee received, and only that question the amount of proceeds that you can credit.
That's the point. I don't know how relevant this view are, but some people that I talk to say, well, is this a issue? Is this really an issue?
I was going to say, I'll turn to Linda.
I believe this is an important point because. So it's really an issue.
Yeah, and I think it's right. I think depending on the industry sectors, and obviously depending on even particular jurisdictions, how big some industry sectors are.
Only what I have to ask, that's one thing to have in mind.
I think the other big thing that came out of this discussion, which is consistent with our outreach, but came out less perhaps in the IFRIC discussion, was in extractives, you've got like two divisions. You've got the junior miners and you've got the big companies, and the extent to which the issue is material really does depend on where in that camp they fall. And in Canada, as Linda said, like it's, you know, 20% of our is of Canada's market cap.
But would it not be fair if you say it really emerges as being an industry issue, knowing that you hate industry-specific standards? But I mean, there is a so either deal with it in the project for extractive industries, or develop a general principle along the lines like available for use or things like that. But if that's not feasible, then probably the best way to move forward is really first through disclosures and then park it through the deal with it and the bigger project on extractive industries.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think.